Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
All right, good morning, everybody. Once again, it's Tuesday morning, 8 a.m. here in Buckhead, and you are tuned in to Atlanta Legal Experts Radio Show. We have a special guest host here today, Mr. Alvaro Alvarez, right?
Arouse.
It's okay. Alvaro Arouse.
I figure I do enough shows, I'll finally get the
Yes, right. You've been here before as a guest, as a co-host with Emily.
Yes, absolutely.
And you're with 3A.
Law Practice Management. I help lawyers be more efficient, help them market, help them use technology, basically all the stuff they didn't teach you in law school.
Very good. And you help them from the startup lawyers to the existing ones?
I get a lot like this in April. I think we had four startup firms and, you know, they'd been practicing 20 years, and but they needed everything from, you know, branding and marketing ideas to space, which Emily was able to help out with Peachtree offices. So,
nice. Yeah. And you're pretty hands-on there on your day-to-day basis?
I'm hands-on. We're working with, we've got almost about 100 projects right now. We're in 16 states. I'm headed to Los Angeles
wow.
in a couple of weeks to work with some clients out there. So
got it going on big time.
Yeah, we're hopping.
Excellent. Okay, well, this episode of Atlanta Legal Experts is brought to you in part by Peachtree Offices. Work virtually anywhere. 3A Law Practice Management, helping lawyers start and grow their practice. Atlanta's John Marshall Law School. You can find their logo and link to their website on AtlantaLegalExperts.com. Also like to make a short announcement here about the Divorce Town Mixer coming up. Atlanta Legal Experts Radio is proud to sponsor Lisa Decker's popular Divorce Town USA Mixer. Woohoo! All right. If you are in a profession that helps people with matters related to divorce, this event is for you. Come and network with other divorce professionals, including attorneys, financial planners, CPAs, and the like. It's going to be May 6, 2015 at 1455 Lincoln Parkway, Suite 400, Atlanta, Georgia 30346 from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Hors d'oeuvres, beer, and wine will be served. So stay tuned for more details on that. All right, Divorce Town Mixer.
Those are good events. I helped her with a couple others and great showing.
Good. Yeah, so it's a great way to network with other professionals in the industry.
Absolutely.
Excellent. All right, so we'll briefly introduce our guests here today before we get into the interviews. I'd like to first introduce Mr. Chris Stombaugh. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Ryan?
Doing fine. What are you going to be sharing with us today?
Well, I'm going to be talking about what we are doing in terms of research and development and bringing science back into the courtroom as far as helping lawyers tell stories better and more effectively.
Integrating science into the courtroom.
Absolutely.
To help lawyers. All right, very interesting. We look forward to hearing about that. Next to him is Heather Brown with Heather Brown Law Firm. Is that correct?
Good morning. Yes, Heather Brown with Brown Law LLC.
Brown Law LLC. And tell us what you are doing over there.
Doing a lot of work with landlords and property managers in the commercial and residential area, both for lease enforcement and primarily bankruptcy issues.
Okay, excellent. Look forward to hearing about that. And also like to welcome to the studio this morning, Meredith Reagans. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. And please share with our listeners what you'll be talking about today.
I am the executive director of Georgia Lawyers for the Arts, and I will be talking about our organization and ways that other attorneys can get involved with our organization.
All right. Excellent. And our other guest here in the studio is Mr. Harmon Caldwell. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. And tell us a little bit about your law practice.
Well, Harmon Caldwell, I'm at Caldwell & Watson. Caldwell & Watson does three things. We do divorce, we do trust and estate litigation, and we do business disputes. And I'm here to talk about divorce.
Okay. Excellent. And with that being said, I'll turn it back over to you, Alvaro.
Good morning, guys. Well, I'm excited to talk to you, Harmon. You're a veteran, I guess, in family law.
Does that mean old?
A little grayer than I am. I still have some gray, but Harmon,
your hair looks good.
Thank you, thank you. Harmon has been practicing for almost 38 years here in Atlanta. Like he said, he's the managing partner of Caldwell & Watson, and he literally wrote the book on divorce, Harmon Caldwell's Georgia Divorce Handbook. He's handled over 1,000 cases, tried over 150 jury trials, which in the divorce world is a lot, and appellate work, over 70 matters in the appellate courts. So what are, you know, after in almost 40 years, what are some common trends that you see? Do you see anything evolving or?
Well, one, they're probably in the divorce area, they're probably a lot fewer trials than there were when I started practicing. It used to be the judges would say, Caldwell, get down here and get your clients and try your case. Now there are all sorts of alternative dispute resolution projects that reduce the number of trials. So that's number one. Number two, adultery is far less of an issue than it used to be when I started practicing.
That's a good thing.
If you're well, some people don't think so, but that's the way the courts handle it. And three, probably the technology issues, computers, people keeping financial records on computers, and a spouse gets hold of the information on that computer and brings it in, and sometimes it doesn't jive with what the person on the other side has said were their assets. So there's a lot more technology, cell phones you can get a lot of information out of, recording devices. It's a lot easier to record somebody who's yelling, cussing, screaming, yeah. And then come, you bring that into court, and all of a sudden there's sort of an allegation that that's an everyday occurrence when, in fact, the person might be set up. So.
And even GPS. Even GPS, they can track where you're driving to if you're going to go see that paramour or whatever the issue is.
Technology is wonderful, but it can make a difference in a case.
So what do you tell your clients in terms of how to avoid mistakes when you're going through a divorce?
Well, the first thing, if somebody is thinking about divorce, the first thing they need to do is go see a lawyer. And do some planning up front. Talk to a lawyer before you talk to your spouse a divorce. And tell your lawyer everything. Lawyer can't help you. Lawyers and doctors are the same. You know, they can't help you unless you tell them the truth. I think another big mistake is for a spouse to tell their spouse that there's someone else. Just don't do that. Moving out of the home, particularly where there are kids involved, is a huge mistake. Cleaning out bank accounts or cutting off credit card access, big problems. So those are some typical mistakes that I see a good bit.
And so do you guide them throughout the case, or do you just tell them right at the beginning, hey, avoid this, don't do this on Facebook? How do you keep them in line, if possible?
Well, one, I expect clients to follow my advice. Sometimes they don't, but I expect them to follow my advice. And so we sit down. You know, I view a lawyer's role as a partner with the client to get through this and get the client through the case and out of it in the best economic position. That's what I do. I don't deal with the emotional issues. I deal with the economic issues. So we sit down and talk about how the decisions that the clients make and what I ask the client to do will impact the economic results at the end of the case. And that usually makes a difference.
Well, one way I think talking about the economic impact of a divorce case are the trials. I mean, do all the states allow jury trials, or what's unique about Georgia?
Well, Georgia and Texas are the only two states that still allow jury trials. And most times cases are tried to a judge. Most of the cases that I try are tried to a judge. Only when conduct is particularly bad on the other side do you want to try the case to a jury. And the reason for that is judges have heard a lot of bad conduct cases. I don't want to say they're immune to it, but they've heard it before. And so it doesn't have as big an impact. However, when there's conduct that's bad and a jury hears it, jury is often the conscience of the community. They hear some bad conduct. They want to punish a wrongdoer for that bad conduct. And so that's when you ask for a jury trial.
So, and with a jury trial, can they decide everything, including custody?
Juries don't decide custody, but everything else.
Everything else.
Everything else.
All right. That's fascinating. So aside from, you know, speaking with a lawyer when first contemplating divorce, any other professionals or ideas for your clients besides coming to see you?
In terms of
a counselor or other attorneys that they might need to see. I know you do the estate work, so you're able to help them that way.
What we focus on often, and most of the cases we handle, involve assets that are not liquid assets. And that's what you need to focus on, real estate. You've got to figure out how to appropriately value the real estate so it gets divided in a way that benefits your client. Closely held business, major issue. How is that closely held business going to be valued? Are you going to include the value of the spouse who's been running the business, or do you focus on the business as being something that if it had to be sold, what's the value? It may not be worth a lot. Typically, there'll be a husband who has a business. That's not to shortchange the wives, because they often do as well. But more often, there's a husband with a business, and the wife wants to put a huge value on it, and it's usually not worth that.
So you have to have a lawyer who's well-rounded in business, potentially having to go to trial and litigation and real estate. How do you pick a good attorney, divorce attorney?
Well, one, you talk. First thing I think anybody should do is talk to their friends. Everybody knows somebody who's been divorced. Find out if your friend was satisfied with their lawyer. Were they comfortable with the lawyer? Was the lawyer reasonable? You know, did they get a good result? Interview 3, 4, 5 lawyers. Talk to a number of different folks. Find somebody who has experience, who's been there before, who tries cases in the county where you live. Find somebody you are comfortable with, because your lawyer is your partner. And if you're uncertain about a lawyer, ask the lawyer if they have a motion hearing or a trial coming up that you can watch. Go down there and watch. See what you're getting. You know, a lot of lawyers sound great when they're in their office, but get them in the courtroom and it's a different story.
Yeah. So is that why you wrote the Georgia Divorce Handbook?
I wrote the little book. It came out of meeting with clients, and I would always meet with a client for an hour, give them an overview of the divorce process, give them some ideas of how their case might go. But when somebody comes into a lawyer's office, there's a lot of emotion going on. They're scared to death, typically. And so people wouldn't absorb everything that I was telling them. And so I wanted to give them something that they could take home with them, something they can read in private, focus on those issues. The book developed from that. It deals with the issues from a layman's perspective. It takes you through the entire divorce process, from how to find a lawyer to trial and appeal. And it's strictly, you can read it in about 2 hours, and gives you a good overview that people just don't absorb when they're in that office for that hour.
It's overwhelming. So how do people get a copy of the book? How do they get a hold of you?
HarmonCaldwell.com is probably the easiest way. There are links to the book. It's in Barnes & Noble. Eline.
Nice.
Hardcover, soft cover, yeah. Amazon. Yeah. You know, it's done very, very well.
Excellent. And then are you on Twitter or any of those social media guys?
I think I'm on all of them.
You're on all of them.
Yeah,
right.
I see here it's twitter.com/HW Caldwell. Also facebook.com/HarmonCaldwell. And he's got a LinkedIn profile. So if you just search Harmon Caldwell, you can connect with him there.
You'll find me.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being on the show. Feel free to
thank
chime
you,
in.
Thank you, Alvaro.
No problem. And next is one of my favorites, Meredith with
thank
GLA.
You.
Yes, yes. I've been fortunate to know Meredith for almost 2 years now.
That's right.
And Meredith is the ED, the Executive Director of Georgia Lawyer for the Arts, which is a nonprofit organization that provides legal assistance to artists to ensure their life's work is legally protected. Through her position at GLEA, Meredith is responsible for every aspect of the organization's operations, and sitting on the board, I know that is a lot that she does for the group, for the organization. She was formerly a commercial litigation attorney at a practice group called Bloom, Sugarman, and Everett, a boutique litigation firm. She was also formerly part of the practice group Robbins, Kaplan, Miller, and Ceresi, a national firm, for 11 years. And before that, she clerked for the Honorable Ernest Tidwell at the District Court, Northern District of Georgia. So welcome, Meredith, to
the
radio.
Thank you, Alvaro. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit in your own words about, you know, Georgia Lawyer for the Arts and, you know, being on the inside, what you see, how you've seen it evolve, and the vision you see going forward.
Yeah, so as you said, we're a nonprofit that provides pro bono legal services to Georgia artists and arts organizations. We do have income caps for artists, and it's $30,000 a year if they make less than that, which sadly most artists do. Mm-hmm. So they qualify for pro bono legal assistance. Arts organizations, if their annual budget is less than $1 million, they qualify. And almost every arts organization except those at the Woodruff Arts Center. So you're talking about, you know, the Symphony, the High Museum, the Alliance. Their budgets are greater than $1 million, but pretty much every other arts organization in Georgia qualifies. So what we do, we don't really practice law at GLA. I'm the only full-time employee. I would never sleep if I had all of our cases. But we have a roster of about 700 very generous attorneys who take our cases. And we're very fortunate that really the turnaround time, by the time either an organization or an artist comes in and has an intake with us, we are placing the cases in about 2 to 3 days.
Oh, wow, that's quick.
Yeah, so we're just, really, it's because of the attorneys.
The network.
Yeah, the attorneys out there are fantastic.
So when you say artists, I mean, are we talking the whole spectrum, photographers, painters, singers, dancers, I mean, actors?
Absolutely. Every type of artist there is, and it's not just professional artists. It's also we've had 70-year-olds who their life's dream was to write a book.
Oh.
And, you know, they're an artist. There's an older lady who, she was a social worker, and she always wanted to write a book. And so she was, she came into us, and she was about to sign a contract. There was a publishing, and I put publishing in quotes, publishing company, that she was going to pay them $8,000 to publish her book. And really all they were going to do was convert the Word document into a PDF. And fortunately, she came to us before she signed the contract, and we were able to say, stop. She had saved up for 5 years to be able to get this book published, and so we didn't really give her legal advice, although we did say do not sign this until we get you a lawyer. I mean, we do have some sort of
leeway.
Yes. I could probably handle about 50% of the cases, but like I said, it doesn't make sense.
I don't know if you could, yeah.
Yeah, it's just not the best use of my time. But the bar, as part of ethical code, they strongly suggest that each lawyer perform 50 hours of pro bono work. And so it's a pretty easy sell for us.
So if it's a broad spectrum of artists, I imagine it's the same kind of spectrum of issues. What kind of, if you could, like, are they IP issues? Are they formation issues? What kind of legal issues do you tend to see from the artists?
I would say about probably 40% or so are copyright issues. So when an artist creates a work, they own the copyright to that. And artists want to know more about, like, what does that mean? Also, they can register with the U.S. Copyright Office, and we help them with that. We probably get about 10% of trademark issues, but those are with, like, brands, and that's more of a commercial situation. And so we don't see those quite as much. We probably get about 25% of business formation. So a lot of people, they don't really understand, you know, the difference between an LLC and a C corp and an S corp. So we or a sole proprietorship, and so we get them an attorney who can help them with forming a corporation. And then the other 25% is going to be contract interpretation or contract drafting. So that's sort of, I would say, about half is IP. Half is the sort of more contract / business formation issues.
Okay.
And let me just say this, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but you know, the other thing that we GLA does, and you may be getting to this, but we have recently partnered with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and what we're doing with them is ensuring that low-income inventors can get a patent prosecution attorney.
Yeah.
And that's been very successful.
That launch was it in February or March?
It was February, yes.
February, yeah. It was a well-attended event. And that actually speaks to what Meredith's been able to do with GLA. I sat on the board before she came along, and so I saw the before. And what she's been able to accomplish in these 2 years, not only to promote the organization, to improve the finances, which for a nonprofit is, I mean, absolutely critical. You've done an amazing work. And so are some of the events that you have coming up in the summer to help raise some awareness and some funding for the organization?
Well, first of all, thank you for those kind words. It's been a... as you mentioned, I clerked for a judge, and then I practiced for about 14 or 15 years, and I walked into running a business, which I'd never done because I was never a partner. I was always either an associate or counsel. And as y'all sitting around the table know, it's very different when you're the business owner versus the employee. All of a sudden I was not a business owner because it was a nonprofit, but I feel like it's my business. And so I run it like that to make sure I'm fully responsible that the lights are on. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we do have some significant fundraising activities. Our biggest is at the end of the year in December, which is our gala. This year happens to be our 40th year in existence. We were founded in 1975. So my hope is that this is going to be an outstanding gala. Last year was great. Yeah, it was the
biggest gala. Yes. Yeah. I don't know how you can top last year's.
Yeah. I think I just want it to be as good. We were at Callenwald last year, but that's already been we're already planning that, but sort of upcoming, on Saturday, May 9th, there's a band that, frankly, they were around in the late 90s, and they were a bunch of Emory Law School and med school students, which I don't know how these guys had time to be in a band. And they were like playing all around Atlanta. They're getting back together. Now they have a little bit of gray in their beard. But they had a pretty big following. And so they are putting on a concert in Little Five Points, and we're the beneficiaries. And these guys are having like... their fraternity brothers fly in. I mean,
it's a big event. Big
concert. For these guys it is. And they're super generous. I mean, they're paying for all the costs and giving us all of the gross proceeds.
That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. So that is Saturday, May 9th. On Wednesday, June 17th, we're going to have last year we had a Bruce for the Arts event, and we're going to have a second one at Red Brick Brewery. And, that turned out to be highly successful for us and a very low cost. It's $15. And pretty generous amount of beer and a nice glass. So that's another way for us to sort of get out in the public and they can hear our names and learn about what we do. And let me just say, the concert is actually free with a donation is requested.
Excellent, excellent. So then what, you know, that's how we kind of try to raise some money for the organization. You still have to orchestrate all the work to get done. And I know you have an army of interns, and I know you have this network of 700 attorneys. How do you find new attorneys to get involved? How do you recruit? How can we help, you know, get some more attorneys to help more artists?
Yeah, I'm always looking for lawyers who are interested in taking one of our cases. You know, a lot of it is just relationship building, as you probably know. I do a lot of, I will go in at lunch meetings and pitch GLA. A lot of law firms have once a month lunch meetings and they're looking for somebody to come in for 20 minutes. I attend a lot of events after work. Anytime I meet somebody, you know, I normally ask them if they show any interest in the organization. I ask them if they would be interested in taking a case. The great thing about GLA is these cases are not going to, you're not going to spend 40 hours on a case. I mean, a contract interpretation can take less than an hour. And I say this, when I started at Robbins Kaplan, we had a death penalty case. When I left 12 years later, we still had the death penalty case. And I was working on this. So it's not, these aren't going to be 12-year cases. Yeah. These are not going to be career cases. So just, yeah. And so I guess to follow, to finish the loop on that, they can go to our website, GLA, glarts.org, GLARTS.org. And there's a drop down for attorneys to sign up, and they just need to tell us what their expertise is.
Okay, so IP attorneys, corporate attorneys?
Pretty much anyone who has graduated from law school and is a member of the bar. If you've graduated from law school, you can interpret a contract.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have specific entertainment law expertise.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who either graduated or pending the February bar results looking for something to do. It's a good way not only to start recognizing how to deal with clients and how, but also how to spot issues and then also how to network and meet other people. So
absolutely,
it's a good stepping stone for those attorneys looking for some way not only to get their minds going, but also give back to the community. Well, good to have you.
Thank you, Alvaro.
I'm glad you made it on. Our next one is Heather Brown.
Good morning.
Good morning. And in the world of small circles, we were actually introduced sometime in December, maybe?
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, it was around December.
Around December.
About a month after I opened my firm.
Yeah, coincidentally. And so how's it going?
Things are going great.
Yeah?
And yeah,
doing
well.
Creditor side bankruptcy?
Yes, creditor side bankruptcy and really any creditor enforcement issue, but the focus is on bankruptcy. And I specialize in lease issues.
Okay. So you've been doing this 14 years, and you help landlords, financial institutions, and other businesses leading legal assistance for creditors' right and bankruptcy matters. You work really, what kind of industries? Retail, industrial, office?
All aspects of commercial, real estate, retail, office, industrial. Can also help landlords that have residential properties with bankruptcy issues. Many of it is the same issue. I have experience representing large institutional lenders in both litigation and bankruptcy issues.
And doing workout settlements? Or
doing some workouts and also the routine work of a bankruptcy case, filing the claims. Yeah, I approach, there's three aspects to any bankruptcy case. You want to maximize your client's recovery, and that's across the board, commercial, residential. Everyone wants to maximize their recovery if there's any assets to be had. You want to protect the rights of your client, particularly landlords. Landlords have very special rights in bankruptcy, and they have rights and privileges that some other creditors don't have. And I spend a lot of time educating them regarding how they're different than you know, the auto loan creditor or the mortgage creditor. They have unique sections of the bankruptcy code and unique rights. So a lot of what I do is help guide individuals and businesses through the process of bankruptcy. And On good days, we recover them some money.
Excellent. So you just opened, what, I guess 5 months ago? What were you doing before that?
Prior to opening my own firm, I practiced bankruptcy law at Kitchens Kelly Gaines here Buckhead.
Nice, nice. And always bankruptcy in 14 years, or did you dabble in other practice areas?
I dabbled in divorce, Harmon, for about a year, and I had to get out. And then I also have, I've experienced representing a Chapter 7 trustee. The first 5 years of my bankruptcy career was really focused on the trustee side and litigation and issues specific to a trustee. I've dabbled in a little bit of trademark law. That's interesting. I did enjoy doing that. And general commercial litigation. I have a lot of background in litigation in the commercial context.
But you found your groove, your expertise then on the creditor side of bankruptcy. So what's an ideal client? I mean, a landlord, I mean, I own some rental houses. Or are you looking like apartment landlords? Like, what's a perfect client for you?
Well, a perfect client is a property manager or commercial landlord that has retail or office space. But as I mentioned, in the bankruptcy process, I can assist residential and commercial landlords in all aspects. So it really doesn't matter the size. A lot of the landlord issues are the same. But if I were to pick an ideal client, it would be a property management company or commercial landlord.
And then what are other types of clients that you help?
Lenders, banks, lenders, really any creditor, a small business. I have several clients who are small businesses that are owed some money. There's a bankruptcy going on and they want some help in finding out what rights they have, what claims they can file. I help with some lease enforcement issues. A commercial or residential landlord wants to recover their property when they unfortunately have a bad tenant. So I'm able to help those. And I work on national and local bankruptcy cases. So I handle bankruptcy cases in jurisdictions such as Delaware, New York, New Jersey.
Maryland.
I have one in Michigan right now.
Okay, wow. Do you have to travel or?
No, you don't. Bankruptcy is a very electronic process.
Federal.
Yeah, it's federal. So, and it's all online.
And so I've always been fascinated about bankruptcy because it's usually somebody's not getting money. So how do you charge these? How do you charge your clients?
On the creditor side, you charge hourly, but I also will have some fixed fee options. For example, I have a fixed fee for a motion for relief from the automatic stay, which is a routine matter. I offer some fixed fee options for filing a proof of claim. Generally, what I do is work with my clients, assess the case, assess the likelihood of any recovery, and make decisions going forward as to, how aggressive they are. And there are times what particularly landlords need to be very aggressive in recovering their space or, preventing their lease from being assigned to another tenant that they don't necessarily want.
And do you find that your practice is mainly reactive in terms of you're reacting to what a client situation is, or do you help clients in a proactive manner, even if they don't have any potential issues, how to protect them to prevent it?
I do both. I would say it's predominantly reactive. When a bankruptcy is filed, a client needs to understand what the next steps are. But it's also proactive in education. I do seminars for a lot of the property management companies and landlords that I represent to educate them on the process, when they need a lawyer. I always advise that you at least initially speak with a lawyer. Don't receive a notice of bankruptcy and assume, I'm not going to get any money, I shouldn't do anything. And I think when we have those conversations and when that education occurs, that overall my clients are satisfied. And I'm big on saying this is a cost-benefit analysis. These are your rights, but we'll have a conversation. Does this make sense for you to do?
So how do you go about educating people? Are you in organizations? Do you give CLEs? Or you just wait until that one-on-one?
I'm in a lot of organizations. I'm speaking at the Real Property Institute in Sandestin in May.
Nice.
I've spoken for some local CLEs. I will go into client meetings, lunch and learns. As Meredith mentioned, some law firms have monthly meetings. Well, a lot of property management companies operate similarly, or tenant brokers. I'm involved in the Atlanta Commercial Board and the Commercial Real Estate Women. So several organizations where I can talk with people and make the education or the seminar portion available.
Excellent, excellent. And so where do you see your firm growing in the next year, couple of years? Do you see expanding? Do you want to just kind of keep it yourself?
Well, of course, I want to expand and I want to continue to grow. In terms of long-term plans, still looking at options. I mean, 5 months in, I'm very happy with where things are going and how it's progressing. And, you know, I look forward to continued success.
And where'd you hang up your shop? Where in
my Atlanta? Office is in Vinings.
In Vinings.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Right off Paces Ferry.
And then what's your, how do we get a hold of you?
I have a website. It's hdbrownlaw.com. And I can also be reached. My telephone number is 404-994-4300.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it's good to finally connect a face with the
name. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
All right. You are listening to Atlanta Legal Experts Radio, brought to you in part by Peachtree Offices. Work virtually anywhere. 3A Practice Law Practice Management, helping lawyers start and grow their practice. Atlanta's John Marshall Law School. You can find their logo and link to their website on AtlantaLegalExperts.com. I'd also like to remind our listeners about the Divorce Town Mixer. Atlanta Legal Experts Radio is proud to sponsor Lisa Decker's popular Divorce Town USA Mixer. If you are in a profession that helps people with matters related to divorce, this event is for you. Come and network with other divorce professionals, including attorneys, financial planners, CPAs, and the like. It's going to be May 6 at 1455 Lincoln Parkway, Suite 400, Atlanta, Georgia, 30346. From 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., hors d'oeuvres, beer, and wine will be served. Stay tuned for more details and make sure you go visit AtlantaLegalExperts.com. Now back to you, Alvaro.
Rich, I never noticed what a good radio voice you have.
Well, I'm in the right business then, right? I'm not a lawyer, so.
Speaking of lawyers and somebody who just opened up another shop, we have Chris. Chris or Christopher?
Chris is fine.
Chris Stombaugh, and he was in Atlanta and now has just joined Smith up in Baltimore. They're two of the nation's leading trial lawyers. And just opened their new firm. And what's interesting, I'm reading your bio, but you have a lot of technology. And the alliance includes Next Research, which uses cognitive, social, and behavioral research to create predictive models and personalized trial strategies, as well as Next Trial Innovation, which will train and educate trial lawyers in how to use advanced research. And so
that's a mouthful. Isn't
yeah, it,
it
is. And so Stombaugh Smith and Company apply these methods to trial negotiations and legal consulting services. And so what led you to this part in your career?
Well, I've spent much of the last several years training lawyers. I'm on the faculty of Jerry Spence's Trial Lawyers College. And I've through my firm here in Atlanta, the Keenan Law Firm, I've had an opportunity to train mostly plaintiff lawyers. For the past few years as well. And one thing that has become really painfully obvious is that the legal profession, as far as trial work, has big problems. And part of our big problem is the almost complete inability to communicate with ordinary people. And that's a problem,
yeah.
Particularly when you have clients who are absolutely trusting in you to get the message across. And what's happened is that there have been, over, let's say, the last 10 or 15 years, a spate of horrible, horrible verdicts for lawyers who thought they had dream cases, great facts, great law, and jurors just going absolutely sideways. And, you know, lawyers respond in a few ways to that. One is that they blame the jury and figure, well, these people are just biased. Of course, they are. They're people.
Yeah.
The other aspect is that they fail to sort of look and say, maybe the problem is with the message and the messenger. And lawyers have a couple key issues with this. One is source credibility, which is you go into a courtroom. I mean, yeah, trust me, I'm a lawyer. I mean, that's almost a joke. The other thing is that they also tell stories and true stories, obviously, tell true stories not very well. In fact, one of my favorite sayings, which my partner hates, is sometimes the other side lies well and we speak the truth badly.
Huh.
And that is a problem. And so what we've discovered is that when you apply more modern techniques, more modern information, and take cutting edge, bleeding edge research sometimes out of the consumer area, out of cognitive science and out of social psychology, and you port it to the legal setting, really good things can happen. You actually have jurors who I often liken to prisoners who are there. And, you know, they have very little interest in this. Typically, these are other people's problems. What we do is help lawyers communicate
the truth in a way that's compelling, and where the jurors see their own interests and their own community's interests. I mean, Harmon made a good comment earlier about the idea of the being the conscience of the community. And if they feel like they're there just dealing with OPP, which is other people's problems all the time, they have very little interest in that.
So one of my favorite questions to ask trial attorneys is, what do you think makes a case? You know, some attorneys say it's at the intake. It's analyzing the case. Some people say it's in critical expert depots. Some people say it's in the voir dire. You know, are you saying it resides with technology, communication, and the jury? Is that kind of where you're putting?
Well, I think John Steinbeck said it best when he said, unless the story is about the hearer, he will not listen. And so if it isn't about them, then you are telling the story to the wrong people. I mean, part of the problem that we have is we have other lawyers watch us try cases. And Harmon actually made a good point about, well, watch them in the courtroom and see what you're going to get. But lawyers will have a totally different view of the performance of an attorney during a trial than the jurors will or other lay people, which is why we focus a lot on using focus groups. Because part of our issue is that the longer a lawyer practices law, and I'm at 23 years, and I'm not nearly as far as some other folks are, but
Didn't say that, Harmon. I didn't even provoke it.
No. But as the longer you practice law, the less we generally, as a group, understand how ordinary people think about anything. And so you are going to now be trusted with a person's case, their one case. How are you going to be able to bridge this gap and be able to tell their story in a compelling way that's actually going to have the interest of the decision maker?
So, I mean, you're not only pioneering this sort of innovation, you obviously teach,
right.
But you know, you've also, I'm reading your bio, you've got some pretty significant verdicts as a trial attorney. What sort of cases? I mean, these are 7-8-figure cases. What sort of case? Are they tort cases?
Yes, my background's in tort. However, what we're working on here with Next involves both civil and criminal law. So we're really broadening because, you know, obviously when you're talking about source credibility, the criminal lawyers are very interested in that as well. My cases have involved, some high profile, civil actions coming out of high profile murder cases, and as well as cases involving what's called stray voltage, which is dairy farmers versus utilities. But many of them involve construction site accidents. And in my last practice, I was in charge of a Med Mal group. So okay. That's an area that is also a tough area for plaintiffs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I saw that you've been barred in Maryland since 92.
Iowa is my first
Iowa.
Bar.
Okay, you're okay.
93, but I'm licensed in Wisconsin, Iowa, and Minnesota. I'm the immediate past president of the State Trial Lawyers of Wisconsin. Despite the fact that I'm trying cases, unfortunately for my family, all over the country, I spent 3 months in California trying a case last summer, and if you ever have the opportunity to do that, don't.
I'm seeing here.
Even if you win... You lose.
I bet, especially with family. See it's your co-partner here that's from Maryland. And so is it just the connection between the two of you that took you to Maryland? Why couldn't you do what you're doing here in Atlanta?
Well, the aspect was that even though I was with an Atlanta firm, and I would, fortunately, Delta has many great flights per day from Madison, Wisconsin, so I was able to get here significantly. My practice has been in the upper Midwest and then largely in the West and in the South. So what we are connecting is geographically, but also people who had kind of a vision for changing the way that that trial lawyers try their cases and do it in a much more effective way for their clients. So that we had a passion for doing the same thing.
And so do you share that vision that, the legal industry is in trouble?
Well, I think that's maybe a broader question than what I would probably agree with. But I think the trial aspects of the civil end and even the criminal end are in trouble. We see fewer and fewer cases getting tried, largely because of mediation, which I think overall has been a net negative for the trial work in this state and across the country. Part of the reason for that is that most lawyers don't know what cases are worth anymore. because there aren't enough trials happening. In 2011, I tried six large jury trials and one, two-week trials in that time period. And that was insane. But, I mean, it used to be where civil trial lawyers would try a case every, once or twice a month sometimes. I know several lawyers.
Or more frequently.
More frequently. So what's happening is lawyers are getting, number one, they're out of practice. Number two, we have generational shift going on. We have these Gen Y folks coming into jury pools and creating a lot of surprises. The aspect isn't that juries are getting worse. It's that lawyers are not able to connect. And it's kind of like when lawyers complain about those jurors, even the Gen Y folks, it's sort of like people on a low-rated TV show blaming the audience.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
So, I mean, in terms of fixing the situation, especially with these younger kids coming out,
I have two of my own.
Yeah.
They're great.
Do you think it's in these focus groups? I mean, it's odd to see. I mean, you're seeing a trend now of more focus groups, but you really think that's going to be part of the solution?
Well, it is part of the solution, but you have to ask the right questions in the right way. And part of the aspect is that lawyers have, there's a big interest more recently in focus group, and so few people know how to do them in a way that's meaningful. I mean, the marketing world has largely moved away from focus groups because they weren't getting the type and quality of information they wanted to know if people actually going to buy this product.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you have to do innovative focus groups. You have to do them somewhat differently and do what we're learning from places like Harvard Business School and others. Gerald Zaltman, the great cognitive science researcher, showing what are more effective ways to find out what people are actually going to do. And that's what we're trying to do is make sure our message is getting to people in ways that they're going to actually respond to.
Through language. And I love actually talking, not that you guys weren't any fun, but this is a really good bridge of science. My parents were in medicine, so I
Excellent.
Love science. I have a creative writing degree, and, you're focusing on language, so how do we use the science in a legal aspect, which is fascinating, but then also using language to make sure it's communicated to the listener.
Part of our problem right now is that research from MIT, Sandy Pentland's research in a book called Honest Signals, which I recommend to every lawyer who ever has to go in front of a jury, is showing us a couple of things. One is that content doesn't matter very much in comparison with other things that lawyers can do. And that book points out that there are three main things that lawyers can do to be persuasive. Number one, vocal variation.
Yeah.
Okay. Do not speak in a monotone if you can avoid it. Okay. Number two, physical dominance of the setting, meaning how much are you moving in this environment? And third is how they use their gestures, how they use their body language. Okay. This is amazing. Some of the studies that they did from everything from speed dating they did MBA projects where they would try to convince people of one thing or another. One group could actually hear the message. The others could only see it and hear the voice, but not distinct words. And to everyone's amazement, the same people won. It didn't matter what the content was. It had to do with how they were moving, how they were speaking, and how they used their voice. It's absolutely critical.
So with what you and Michael are working on, do you see this with this sort of awareness, with this sort of education to other lawyers? Do you see more cases going to trial as a result or less cases?
I actually hope that there are more cases, but what's happening right now is that lawyers lack confidence many times. They got shellacked on a good case, and now they have a case that they don't think is as good as the last case that they got shellacked on, and they lack confidence. Well, what happens? Cases settle for less. Somebody decides to take a plea deal that makes absolutely no sense for their client because they don't want to be humiliated again, okay? Or they think, well, it could be even worse. So what we're trying to do is arm them with the tools to better do their job. I mean, it's hard to believe, but early in the last century, when we talk about Darrow and William Jennings Bryan, I mean, you go to the regular county courthouse, that was the form of entertainment in the community. People would go to trials to watch them. I think people are sentenced to trials now, and that's not good.
Not a good thing. So what are you focusing now your... Is it 50% still being an attorney, a trial attorney,
oh, yeah.
50% on this, all these concepts, or how
they're my two passions. So I love trying cases, and that's why I encourage other lawyers to do it. In fact, I did that with my membership as just past president of the State Trial Lawyers of Wisconsin. I said, I'm encouraging you all to try three cases this year, because that is how we'll get offers out of the toilet, if you will, which is where they are many times. And that's also where we're going to be able to do better work. So I'm passionate about trying cases. I love it. I'm committed to continuing to do it. But and when you think, if you really care about this issue and you really care about what's happening in courtroom after courtroom in this country, I can do so much more if I train somebody else. It's like, you know, giving a man a fish versus teaching someone to fish, and or a woman or a child even, you know. That's sort of how I look at it. It's a virtuous cycle, and obviously I love to talk about the science, and I'm fascinated with how people make decisions, because it's never how lawyers think, you know. But the good thing, one of the surprising things, if I could just sort of wrap up with this, is when you actually do scientifically based jury interviews when you win, okay? See, most lawyers are interested in what juries think after they lose. When they win, they have their idea. Well, I won because this cross-examination was just spectacular, or this opening statement, or I was so connected to the jury in Fort Dyer. And you do some science-based research afterwards, and they discover you won for an entirely different reason.
Yeah,
and that is enlightening.
Yeah, I'm sure. So how do I find a lawyer to refer you to these concepts? How do I find a client to refer you a case?
Well, I mean, you can go to our website, which is stombaugh-smith.com, and it's S-T-O-M as in Mary, B as in boy, A-U-G-H, Smith, S-M-I-T-H.com, or you can call us directly at 410-337-2200.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thanks. It was a good discussion, good group. Any questions for cross questions or anything?
I'd like to say I really enjoyed hearing Chris, because I agree very much. There are not enough cases tried. Lawyers don't get experience. When you walk in the courtroom, the lawyer has got to have some experience. And unfortunately, many of the judges now are overworked. Fewer cases are tried. Lawyers don't get experience. And sort of it, as Chris said, is spiraling down. I also liked Chris's comment about trials formerly being entertainment. I tell clients all the time when they come into my office that if we go try this case, it's not about finding truth and justice. It's entertainment. And you better entertain that jury. If you don't keep the jury's attention, then they're not going to hear your message, and it doesn't matter what the truth was. You're going to lose. So you got to work hard to choreograph your case, and I think Chris's discussion was right on point. So
if I could sort of respond to Harmon on that, obviously we try to tell the truth in an entertaining way for both of us, no doubt.
Certainly.
But one other factor that actually we didn't get a chance to talk about is we now have a generation of trial judges who have almost no trial experience. And they are typically not ready for prime time as trial judges many times. And that may not be the case when you deal with Superior Court judges in Georgia. But in many states, you have one judge fits all, and you'll have people who actually don't have much trial experience being judges and not being even very familiar with the rules of evidence. We're seeing a lot of slippage with respect to what's going on in trials or with courts at those levels.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, many times a trial judge will refer the case to a senior judge who does have courtroom experience in trying cases. I see that a lot, and many of the cases I try wind up being tried to a senior judge rather than the judges that to whom the case is actually assigned.
This has been one of the most eclectic groups, I think, that we've
had. I think so. And back to your point about the science, when you first mentioned in the beginning, I thought, you know, science, technology, this, you know, kind of behind it. You're talking about the science of human nature, the science of human behavior, and how it relates to the courtroom and how that can translate to the attorneys winning more cases. So where do you find your resources to educate yourself on these?
Well, when you love to try cases and you're nerdy, you know, obviously opportunities abound. But I look at what's happening in advertising media. I look at what advertising research is its own area. Mm-hmm. And if the marketers are spending millions and millions of dollars to conduct their research, why not piggyback on that to some degree rather than trying to recreate a wheel? But, you know, this takes us back into the technology, and Alvaro was discussing this earlier. Technology, it also deals with the visual stuff. I mean, what we do, our visual presentations in court have to be very quick, to the point, you know, right on to have, or we'll start losing attention of Gen Y.
Yeah, I've seen some really fascinating changes in trial graphics and how they present. It's actually interesting.
Yeah, always evolving and such. And so, and I got a question for Mr. Caldwell. You know, what continues to motivate you and to help your clients as you have?
Are you saying he doesn't have the energy?
Still? Well, no, he absolutely does. But what motivates you at the core after all these years? And you've won cases. You wrote the book. Right. And what keeps you going forward?
I enjoy the cases. I enjoy the challenge. I enjoy representing folks. I enjoy taking the case to the courtroom. And trying to get a good result. A lot more cases settle than are actually tried, but you're thinking from the get-go, if this case is tried, how am I going to win this case when it goes to trial? And again, Chris was right, the visuals, I'm the only lawyer in Georgia who has a Bachelor of Visual Arts degree.
Is that right?
And graduated from Georgia State. And I started out back in the 70s using a lot of visuals. And that got me a lot of success and sort of got my name out there as the guy to go to on big cases, because I could win the cases. And it was a lot. The visuals and the art background wasn't a bad pre-law degree at all, even though people say, gosh, how could those two possibly go together?
Well, that's good. You're still motivated, still doing good things for your clients out there. Great news out there. If anybody needs a good divorce attorney, please get in touch with Mr. Caldwell. So, Alvaro, you're right. This was a great show, a good mix of attorneys, a good hot topic, a conversation out there today.
Absolutely.
So we appreciate you sitting in and hosting on behalf of Mrs. Emily Rowell.
And while it's foggy here in Atlanta, I hope she has her feet in the sand somewhere.
Well, she's down at Disneyland or Disney World with her family. So
I'd rather have
feet on the concrete.
She's standing in line somewhere, I guess. So
I'd rather do this.
So thank everybody for listening. Make sure you tune in again next week to Atlanta Legal Experts, Tuesday mornings, 8 a.m., here on Business Radio X. See you all next week.